the Dave and Duke Call-In Show. And now here's your co-host, Speak Free Radio owner David Gahari and the incomparable Dr. David Duke. Limber up your dialing fingers.
Exciting 2 hour show lined up for you with myself and Dr. David Duke and some of the usual guests and some new people. So let's take a look at Speak Free before we get into the show. A lot of new hosts coming on board. And a lot of new times. Monday, the original programming starts at 8 Eastern. So the website, speakfreeradio.com, is in the Eastern time. So it starts at 8 with the flood. He goes 3 hours. Then Ball Busters follows the flood. And that goes 2 hours. And then right after that is Giuseppe's The Sane Asylum. That goes 2 hours. And then we have Jim Fetzer being piped in from RBN. That goes 2 hours. And then after Jim, you've got 3 hours of a mix. And then we get back to the original programming with Davis Lerman. He jumped to 3 hours now. So he does a three-hour show from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern. And then right after him, Nick, Night Nation Review, he does 3 hours from 11 till 2 a.m. So we're almost filled up with just original programming, which is great. Giuseppe is the fella who has been doing so much in that regard to bring great hosts, great content to this network. So thank you, my friend, for all that you do. And Tuesday, you've got, again, The Flood, Ball Busters, and then you've got a mix. Actually, the mix from 1 to 3, that's going to change this Tuesday because Giuseppe forced me to take that spot. So he's really into it. He's like filling these, you know, non-original programming slots. So I'm going to do a show on Tuesdays from 1 to 3 Eastern. So my time in Central is going to be noon to 2. So it's just going to be a call-in show, Dave Gahari call-in show, minus our good friend David Duke, which is tonight, of course. So that's going to start this Tuesday. So following me on Tuesday is going to be, again, Jim being piped in from RBN, Jim Fetzer. And then right after Jim, Zach, Logos Revealed from 5 to 7. Then you got a mix just for 1 hour. And then you got Davis Lerman again for 3 hours. And then another 3 hours of Nick at Night Nation Review. Wednesday, it's kind of like, you know, very similar the days. You know, you've got Flood, Ball Busters, and you got Sane Asylum. You got Jim coming from RBN. You've got only a 1 hour mix on Wednesday from 5 to 6 Eastern. Then you've got Io Kamathi's new show. This will be his fourth show. Wednesdays from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And surprise, the name of it is Jews Are the Problem. Huh. Like his books. And he's going to have another book coming out, actually. A sequel to the first one. And it says now, with Io Kamathi. He used to say my name for some reason, but Giuseppe fixed that. And then Davis Lerman again, 3 hours. And then Nick Night Nation Review, 3 hours. Then you go to Thursday, and same thing. The Flood, Ball Busters. But on Thursday from 1 to 3 are Giuseppe and myself. We have the D+G Speak Free call-in show from 1 to 3 Eastern. Then you got Jim Fetzer again being piped in from RBN. You've got a mix, non-original programming from 5 to 8, 3 hours of that. Then you got Davis and Nick again. 6 hours of those guys. Friday, again, Flood, Ball Busters, Giuseppe's Perfect Triangle, Jim Fetzer again. Then you've got a three-hour mix on Friday from 5 to 8 p.m., then followed by Davis Lerman and Nick at Night Nation Review. Saturday, Flood again. So Flood is Monday through Saturday, 8 to 11. Dennis Fetcho Inside the Eye Live is following on his heels. And after Dennis, you've got Red Ice Radio, which is not original programming. You've got another mix for 2 hours from 4 to 6. Then Ryan Massano. You have the Ryan Massano Show, new time, 6 to 8 Eastern. I was actually on with Ryan last night for the second hour. It was great. We didn't talk about Jews. We just talked about our time in the Navy, in the silent service, the submarine force. So we just, by chance, happened to have both done that in the Navy. And we were in the nuclear Navy, so that's up there in the archives if you want to go listen to it. Then, after Ryan ends at 8 p.m. Eastern, you've got Hoaxbusters. That's Jim Rizzoli. It was, of course, Jim and Joe Rizzoli. And, of course, Joe passed. I believe that was in January. Diane King and Diana Ploss. Now, Joe, a couple of days ago, had a heart attack, and he's in the hospital. He's going to have, I believe, open heart surgery. So prayers would be good if you want to send an email to him. I'll give you his. Actually, the best thing is probably to email Diane King, because obviously Jim is going to be, probably out of touch. For a lot of the time leading up to that and afterwards. Those things are not fun. Her email is Diane, D-I-A-N-E, K-A-Y, King, Diane K. King at hotmail.com. Diane K. King at hotmail.com. And if you can't write it down because I'm talking too fast or whatever, then just go to the archive of this show, which will be up right after it's done, and then you can get it there. Or just email me for the email. Okay, then after Hoaxbusters ends at 10, then you've got a show that used to be on a lot. This guy, John B. Wells, we're phasing that out, as we phased out a lot of the stuff that doesn't belong there. Caravan to Midnight, 10 till 1, and then we get to Sunday, and then the first original programming starts at 10 for 2 hours. That's Eli James Bloodlines. And then you've got, after Eli ends at 12, then you've got non-original programming from 12 till this show, till 7. And, of course, this show is from 7 to 9. It used to be 1 hour. We had to pump it up to 2. And then on the heels of the Dave and Duke Call-In Show is a new program called Deus Solis. I don't know if I'm saying it right, but you could say it any way you want. And that's with, obviously, a new show, a new host, Tony Trus. And it's really good. He's a really nice guy. And all the hosts are really cool. And check it out. And let's now get to the main event. And, of course, the format of the show is anybody can call in from anywhere in the world and ask Dr. David Duke a question or make a comment. And the good doctor has about 2 minutes to answer the question. And about, let's say 15 seconds before that 2 minutes is up, you'll hear this sound. And then on the 2 minute mark, you'll hear it again. Now, the 2 minutes, we don't hold to it. It depends on how many folks are waiting, clamoring to get to David. If there's not a lot of folks in, or if it's a question that might, might require a little more time to answer, then you know, it's not going to be exactly 2 minutes. But generally, that's what it is. And, of course, our ongoing challenge, which we had, I guess, forever. Thank you, Nick. Is if anyone can let us know of a greater existential threat to humanity and free speech other than organized international Jewry, let us know and we'll quit the show. Alongside that, if anyone could think of a more effective deliverer of that message other than Dr. David Duke, let us know and we'll quit the show. And it's true. We will quit. You know, it'll never happen. But so what? We got our first question. We got David Duke. He has a question. Go ahead, Dave. What's your question?
Yeah, I just got a call from a friend that wanted to join the show and ask a question or two. And they're having problems getting hooked up on a Apple phone.
Catherine? Is it Catherine?
It could be. Yeah. I don't know.
Let's bring her in.
I don't know if it's the same one or not.
Yeah, it's Catherine. Hey, Catherine. You're in the show.
Can you hear me?
No, we cannot. Try again.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Dave?
I can hear her fine.
Yeah. Of course we hear you.
You can't believe anything Dave said.
No, don't believe it. Go ahead, Catherine. What's your question or comment for the good doctor?
Okay, well, a brief introduction. I'm David's genealogist, and recently.
Can you explain what that is?
I find people's dead relatives for a living. That's pretty much the long and short of it. Is I find dead people for a living.
Oh, with like a spade and a pickaxe.
For a living. I like that. It has a very good.
If needs be.
A very good round robin effect. I find dead people for a living.
Yeah.
That's a good slogan on your on your card. You know, I'm an expert genealogist. I find dead people for a living.
Right. If they're dead, we'll find them.
That's the hope, anyway.
Yeah, she's a pretty impressive genealogist, and she discovered all kinds of interesting things about my ancestry that I didn't know. I knew some of the stuff I knew, but. I've been pretty amazed, and she's been kind of amazed, too. She tells me the apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
Well, let's hear about what you do, Catherine, and
don't tell him
what you uncovered about this scoundrel.
Well, he comes by it honestly. Recently, I discovered more about the life of his second great-grandfather, Calvin Hedger, originally of Massachusetts, but who ended up in Trumbull County, Ohio. He actually succeeded and establishing a Jew-free town called the Phalanx. I kid you not. There is an exquisitely well-crafted deed where he gives over the land to build this town, and men and women within the city are awarded homes based on their labor and work, with those doing either highly skilled labor or labor that other people do not want to do, like the hard grunt work. Those people are rewarded with higher rooms, up on higher rooms of the floors of these buildings compared to others within the city. And I thought it was a very interesting concept. It was based on the work of followers of Charles Fourier, who was the gentleman who coined the word feminism. And I would like to ask Dr. Duke, how does it feel to know that one of your ancestors actually succeeded in establishing a Jew-free city?
At least for a while, he did, anyway.
He did, up until 1870, when he finally passed on.
Well, I didn't know this about him. I knew his grandfather, that's a Hedger on my father's patriarchal side of the family. And then, you know, my grandmother was a chemistry professor, as you know. Unfortunately died young, probably working too much with chemicals. My father was just maybe 11, 12 years old. But her sister, Carolyn Hedger, was a very famous woman doctor long before that was popular, long before women were professors. But she was a famous doctor who actually helped Belgium fight the epidemics during the
Not only did she help Belgium fight these epidemics, she was handpicked by the director of the Red Cross and sent with over $250,000 of supplies and worked day and night on the front lines, not just miles away from like literal live fire, and wrote back home to the local newspapers begging men, women, everyone to send in whatever scraps of clothing they could so they could furnish it to clothe the poor children that had been bombed out and lost everything. She was an incredible woman who pioneered new techniques. She was a founder of the Eugenics Society there in Chicago. She is heavily involved with Upton Sinclair's work in the jungle with the Armour Meatpacking Plant Factory. She would take care of the women who were working and living in those slums, teaching them how to have better babies. She was one of the founders of the Better Baby Contest in the United States.
You know, when they wrote that book, The Jungle, about the meatpacking exploitation of these European workers that came in, especially in Chicago, especially Scandinavian peoples. And by the way, these companies are run by Jews overwhelmingly, and they were very corrupt. And they got them in there, and they gave them these very tenements, and they paid them just barely enough, so they had to have these tenements to be able to survive, just to even a place to live. And anyway, it was a pretty exploitive situation. And see, she tried to help make sure their children got the milk they needed, the sleep they needed, the conditions they needed for a decent life, which is very interesting. So she was kind of a human rights activist in a real sense.
She actually went around and hand collected the money to purchase a cow to ensure that the babies whose mothers weren't able to breastfeed survived.
Yeah, she was.
It was remarkable for the time period. I mean, we're talking before 1910. When she was pioneering all of this on her own.
She did Better Babies Contest. I mean, I didn't know these things about her. But she's got a whole Wikipedia page historically. And she used to give lectures around the country. And sometimes she'd give lectures at major universities. And
she wrote several books, as a matter of fact, that are in Harvard's library to this day.
Yeah, pretty interesting stuff. But she was a restrictionist. She was one of the people who saw the dangers of immigration. Of course, at that time, the immigration issue was primarily the massive Jewish immigration that was coming in the early part of this 20th century, because a lot of people understood then in America that America was being invaded, kind of the same way that Palestine has been invaded. Of course, there didn't enough Jews to replace us in the population, but they could invade millions of Jews. Millions of Jews came in, basically, who are communists from Russia. In fact, I was just doing some research on that today, showing how this is admitted in major Jewish sources, how the Communist Party was the biggest thing in the world to Jews in America. In fact, I've read another thing in the New York Times, which is, again, a totally Jewish publication, talking about how that the biggest interest of Jews in the United States in the early part of the 20th century was the party, meaning the Communist Party, because there were so many of them communists. And that's kind of interesting. So she was opposed to this massive Jewish immigration and other immigrationists coming into the country. And she saw the danger of that. She wanted to preserve the ethnicity of the country, the heritage of the country, the values of the country, the morals of the country, and the genetic quality of the people, believe it or not. Pretty interesting stuff. So
Let's hear some more about what Catherine uncovered and get her back in after some call. Oh, she left.
No, she left, Dave.
What? Yeah, she's gone.
I don't know why she left. I think she just got disconnected. Let her get connected.
Yeah. Let's get to the calls, and then we'll be ready. Oh, wait, she's here. She's back. Catherine, why don't you go ahead and let us know what more you uncovered about this fella?
Yeah, you got disconnected.
It's very fascinating. Yeah, you're muted, Catherine. There you go. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. That's not even the half of it. David has some very impressive ancestry, just in general. He descends from several Revolutionary War patriots, including ones that served under Benedict Arnold.
Well, yeah, but they weren't necessarily of Benedict Arnold's treasonous character.
Actually. Absolutely not.
Yeah. And
wow.
They were with him at the Battle of Saratoga.
How far back did you go, Catherine?
On some lines, I got bricked walled, and then other ones, you can get it 30-plus generations back with documentation. It's really hit or miss. You see, genealogists, for those who have early United States ancestry, there's what's known as the 1820 brick wall. And this is that time period of our history where a lot of the records are burned, lost to fire. You lost the census records, land records, church records. Courthouses got bombed out, flooded, tornadoes, hurricanes, just absolutely lost to disaster. And I'm a huge proponent of people documenting their ancestry, making sure that they have copies of the original documents and putting those away. People forget the Constitution at one time was held in a moldy basement and held together with scotch tape. I mean, most records that can link you back to your ancestry, to know where you're from, are one disaster away from being absolutely unrecoverable in this country. And people have no understanding of just how fragile that system is.
You know, I'd like to interject something. One thing that makes this very clear how important your ancestry is, if you're a European American or any person of any descent, how important your ancestry is. One of the things that the Jews are doing in Palestine right now, in Gaza, is they're destroying all the municipal buildings. They're destroying and bulldozing the cemeteries. They're destroying any record of people. They're just wiping out their memory because they want them to lose touch with their ancestry. And when a people don't know who they are and they get a sense of their identity, they lose the sense of their identity, when they can't trace their ancestry, it makes them more atomized, and it makes them more easily influenced by media and the other powers that be. So I thought that's something that you were talking about just a second ago, but that's so true, and especially with what's going on right now in Gaza, how the Jews are trying to do that. Oh, they're also trying to kill the best of the Gentiles in Gaza. What do you think about the Gaza issue, Catherine? What's your opinion on, I mean, how shocked are you by what Israel's doing?
Shocked. I mean, utterly embarrassed that we have a genocide financier as the current president of the United States.
Yeah. Man, we've genocided so many Americans in these Jewish wars, like the First and Second.
You're telling me we have a population that's willing to go get frostbite to watch a football game or, you know, whatever sport they're doing. Literally harming each other, getting into riots, riding in the street, chaos, burning buildings down. But hey, you know, let's not do anything about the actual trash leadership that we've got going on in this country right now. It boggles the mind that
Catherine,
this has gone on as far as it has.
Catherine, okay, what can you tell us about that Judenfrei town?
Oh, yes, this is in Trumbull County, Ohio. A lot of David's ancestors passed through Ohio. And it attracted...
Well, by the way, they were pretty much farmer folks. They were farmer folks, too.
Cities scattered across the United States in the mid-1800s. This was part of the lead-up, and this isn't taught in schools, to the Civil War. People forget that Jews in this country weren't allowed to be citizens. As a matter of fact, I think the sole exception that I've been able to find as a genealogist would be the 23 Jewish refugees from Brazil that were admitted to the Dutch colony in New Amsterdam in 1650. And even they had to petition to get rights to be butchers and do menial jobs in the colony. The others, when found, were generally deported. Jews really... It was funny. The other day, Jerry Seinfeld said, oh, you know, I wish we could go back to the 1960s and, you know, where there was a certain understanding that, you know, men were in charge. And I just find that utterly hilarious because if we were going back to white men running things, he wouldn't be in the position that he's in this country.
He wouldn't be a multimillionaire.
It blows the mind how separated we are from the actual history here in the United States. None of this gets taught. And, you know, over in Ukraine, they were a state less time than the Republic of Texas was. But, hey, the United States, Texas, they don't have any legal right to secede from the Union. But somehow Ukraine had this right, and we should absolutely defend them and do nothing to defend the state of Texas or any other state that joined our Union.
Great point.
I could go on forever.
it's really,
yeah, go keep going.
Yeah, it's a Jewish dictatorship. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, David.
Okay. It is definitely a Jewish dictatorship. Mr. Schäumer, who says he's a guardian of Israel, and when he goes in front of AIPAC, not a guardian of New York, or certainly not a guardian of America, but a guardian of the Jewish people is the way he says it, and it's pretty shocking. So another couple points, and you could go in more. You probably know more about a lot of my genealogy than I do, because you've been immersed in it for so long, probably writing, I hear you writing a book about it or something. But, you know, the issue is, too, is some of my ancestors had very interesting roles in, for instance, in American history, like the great-great-great-great-grandfather that I had that actually started the whole Thanksgiving holiday.
And, oh, yes, that would be Edward Rawson.
Mm-hmm.
Of the Massachusetts Bay Colony. He gave the first Thanksgiving proclamation.
Interesting. And I got some signatures of the Magna Carta, which is kind of interesting. And I had one of my direct ancestors, apparently, was appointed by, you know, the Holy Roman Church, the Holy Roman Empire, so to speak, before there was all the Protestantisms, to lead the first Crusades. But
St. Ladislaus, and he died, unfortunately, before he could go crusading.
Yeah, he won every battle. He won all the wars he was in, but he didn't.
And Poland.
He finally got the biggest appointment of his life to lead the Crusades, but he died of a disease, I guess, a sickness.
Catherine, are you going to compile this into some sort of a book or pamphlet?
I have a book on both David's and Don Black's ancestry. I happen to be related to both of them.
Wow. Is it like available for the public to purchase, or it's
not
done yet?
It is not currently available to protect the privacy of living individuals, but it needs to be edited before I can print it. But we're getting there. As a genealogist, it's all about the sources and doing the most complete work that you can. So for me, it's very important that I go into details without also stretching on forever, because you're in each generation you go back, you double the amount of ancestors you have, and it quickly escalates into thousands of people. And Wow. You can imagine all the details on every one of them. There's just not enough days in your life.
I had a notable
do as much as you'd like to do.
Ancestor who was the Queen of Scotland, and interestingly enough, that when we looked at, we went to the church that I go to, and it's very interesting. They have the original stained glass things, which are done simultaneous to her serving as the Queen of Scotland. She was from Hungary originally, the Hungarian aristocrat.
Yes, St. Margaret of Scotland. Right. She was born in 1045 at Reka Castle in Hungary. She was daughter of Agatha of Hungary, whose ancestors are one of the greatest sources of speculation, and it's one of the greatest unresolved mysteries in medieval genealogy, is who the parents of Agatha of Hungary was. I happen to favor the Russian theory of origin.
She was a blonde-haired, blue-eyed. She was really known for her beauty and her kindness to the poor, and the people. People of Scotland loved her. She became a saint in the church because of her good works. And interestingly enough, when we looked at the pictures of her, it was amazing because she looked absolutely identical to my sister. I mean, literally, look, wow. Being my sister.
It was so
friend.
Spooky.
Catherine, let me ask you one question, and then we got to get to the calls, and you're welcome to come back in, of course.
Oh, thank you.
What was the most fascinating fact you uncovered about David.
Oh, about David or David's ancestors? Just to clarify that question.
Yes, yes. Well, David, I guess you could say David is his ancestors. So what was the most fascinating fact you found out in your research as it relates to David?
Well, okay, just don't tell him the truth. Don't tell him the fact that, making a joke here before we go further. Just don't tell him about all my black ancestors and and all my Jewish ancestors, okay?
Oh, of course not. Secret safe with me.
Yeah, leave them out. Leave them out. Go ahead.
You can go ahead and say what you always say to everybody, that I'm
the whitest of the lily whites. Yes. I know. People, they trash talk David and Don online all the time, like, oh, well, if a Klansman ever tested their DNA. Well, actually, I have tested both of them, as a matter of fact, along with several of their immediate relatives. I can assure you there is no Jewish or non-white ancestry in either of their trees, nor their DNA results.
Thank the Lord.
Awesome.
But the most interesting thing I have learned...
I'm not so worried about there might be some other races in there far, far back, because, human beings... But I definitely am glad to hear that I don't have any Jewish blood. That's really nice to know.
If it had been in your tree, you should be able to find any Native American or other non-white ancestry in your tree. Mm-hmm. If it, after 1800, prior to that time, it probably would have been documented in a local history or, otherwise noted, because whites and non-whites marrying, that would have been absolutely scandalous. This whole thing of the Indian princess story is one of the biggest myths in every genealogy.
A lot of whites are so scrambling for meaning, purpose, identity in their life, because they, to be one of those demon whites, as whites are portrayed by the media, the Jewish media all the time, is a bad thing. But they romanticize the Indians, and I have some feelings of very much respect for Indians. I think about their relationship to nature. They were hunters. Many of them were brave warriors, et cetera, et cetera. Even though they were certainly our enemies at the time of the creation and the settling of the frontier and creating the country. But it's hard not to respect them. But at the same time, it's really interesting how that, people are looking for some sort of affirmation. So everybody's got some sort of story. And so-and-so, great, great aunt, uncle, grandfather, whatever, married an Indian princess or something. Because it's a romantic story, and it gives them a sense, well, I'm Indian. So that would maybe make them 1/40th, 1/50th Indian and 99% white. But, oh, they are Indian, and they're
You want to know the truth about the Indians? Let's talk about what just a few of them did to my ancestors. First of all, Samuel Carroll Hanley Sr., an original congressman to Tennessee, helped write the Constitution for that state, was kidnapped by the Cherokee, held captive for 2 years, saved the rest of his unit by getting himself captured and doing this, by the way, forced to run the gauntlet twice. And because he didn't cry, they killed the other man and took him captive for all this time. He was a young man when he was captured, came back covered in scars, gray hair. He'd been brutalized, and he was saved when John Sevier realized, oh no, they're holding him captive. And then he was forcibly adopted into the Wolf Clan of the Cherokee by their chief, John Watts. The original documents proving this are the Draper manuscripts that are held in Washington. Anyone can go look that up. It is a very true and brutal story. During his captivity, they fed him this mixture of like nut milk and frog legs and had the women throw rocks at him along with the children. And this one squaw, he ended up kicking down a hill, even though he had his hands tied behind his back. And she was disgraced among her people. And later, this woman tried to murder him with a hatchet while he was sleeping. She, years later, found out where he lived and tried to track him down. And then he had to kill her.
You're so entertaining, Catherine. We could listen to you all day.
All right. So let Kath. She was about to say the most interesting thing that she found out. Go ahead, Catherine.
Yes. For those who have read My Awakening by David, there is an excerpt in there. And, you know, people think maybe David's putting on about, you know, his trip to Israel and, you know, almost getting killed by the Jews. And, oh, you know, maybe he was just making it up. No, I actually got a copy of his father's military service record in which David was airlifted out for medical treatment. I couldn't believe it. Like, it's
well, that was when I was in Istanbul,
you know, maybe David's buffaloing you a little bit, but to actually read that document and go, wow, he really was telling the truth.
I got sick in Istanbul, so people understand what's going on here. I was in Israel for a few days, and I found out later that apparently the Mossad or some Jewish authorities were in my room while I was gone. And I wondered why they hadn't put me under arrest or anything, because I had all kinds of stuff in my baggage. I was just a naive 20-year-old heading for Europe to see a lot of white nationalists there and people who are pretty much called anti-Semites anyway, because we opposed Jewish supremacism. But anyway, I said, man, they came to my room. And I could see that my books were in different order. So they went in my stuff, but nothing happened to me. The next day I flew out. I got, and one of my legs of my flights was an flight, Israel flight to Istanbul. Then I was going on there for a few days, then going on to Greece. And so the next, that day I didn't eat anything but on the flight. I ate one single meal on the flight, which they say is run by Mossad agents anyway. And that night I started really getting ill. I didn't have anything to drink or eat except some bottled water, which I know had fizz, which was real, and it was probably not infected with anything. And the next day I was really sick. I said I headed off of the Bosphorus and had terrible, terrible headache and sick stomach. And I knew I thought I was going to die. I knew I had a life-threatening disease. I got back to the hotel, grabbed my stuff, and went to the airport. And I was able to catch a flight, change my flight to Athens, because I knew an American military base was there. I was working in Laos for the State Department, teaching anti-communist army officers and Air Force officers in Laos. So I had some privileges there. My father was in, you know, at that point in Laos. Before that, he was in Vietnam. And as a dependent, I was able to get assistance as his dependent at the Naval Base Hospital. I was out for about 5 or 6 days, and I came to, and finally, very weak, very skinny. And I said, "What happened, Doc? I mean, I know I was sick. I barely collapsed into the taxi at the Athens airport." It said, "Take me to the American, you know, base and Naval Base Hospital." And woke up 5 days, 6 days later, and I was out in a coma. And I said, "What happened, doctor?" He said, you had a very sophisticated kind of, very rare, sophisticated kind of food poisoning. I said, "Okay." You know, and he said, "You had about 106 fever for a while. You're lucky to be here. And if you wouldn't have made it to the hospital, you'd have been a statistic. Apparently you came because they had my records there, my flight records. You came from Istanbul. And if you would have gone to the hospital there, I'm sure that you would not be here today. So you're a really lucky guy." But anyway, that's my story. Now, I can't prove that they poisoned me, but it's pretty suspicious in that I know that they were in my room beforehand. And I know that at that point, even though it was slower than with the internet and stuff, in fact, there was hardly internet, but there was communication. They often checked on American visitors and looked at their background, and they would have been able to find my background at LSU, because I was already pretty famous at LSU for my outspokenness against Israel and the Zionist power structure. So that's the story for those people that don't know the story yet. It's all in my book, My Awakening, and you can read more about it there. Yeah, but about genealogy? That was another interest. Any other genealogy? I mean, I had so many interesting people. I had an Armenian in my
Dave, body. We got to get to the other calls, so we'll bring Catherine back in.
Okay, we'll do that.
So it's 20 till. Catherine, we'll get you back in, okay, if you want to come back in?
Sounds good.
All right. We're going to move you from the stage.
She's very articulate.
She's unbelievable. Okay, we got our good friend Richard from the UK. Go ahead, Richard.
Hello. Great to see you guys. Well, hear you guys, I suppose. It raises an interesting question in the sense that, you know, genealogy, you're quite right, David. Your history, ancestors, your heritage, that is very important, and people should, you know, get in contact and find out about that. I wanted to ask as my opening question, I guess, to David Duke, which is what means of finding your ancestors would you recommend? I mean, I know that people send away for ancestor.com, I think it is, and there's like 23andMe, but is there a specific maybe a company that you'd recommend, or maybe Catherine's got her own brand that we can send away stuff to? That's my question.
I think I can speak for her when she comes back. She can address this if you like, that's fine. But she suggested ancestor.com to me. And by the way, people got to be careful with some of these, because in the very beginning, 24andMe and ancestry.com and a lot of these companies were like basically telling people who didn't have any Jewish ancestry that maybe you got some Jewish genes in you. And then later it turned out, and it was all revealed publicly in mainstream media, that this wasn't true. That these testings where they were saying these people had these Jewish genes, and in 99% of the cases, they didn't have Jewish genes. But the reason some people posed for saying this is it helped make people less anti-Semitic, because if people thought they had some Jewish, and I never showed up like that in my tests, my DNA tests. But you got to be careful about some of these tests. And even if they showed somebody up with a few genes that are associated with Jews, doesn't mean that you're a Jew. Because the truth is, we share 80% of our genes with all the mammals. Literally. We share 97% of our genes with all monkeys. 99%. 99.5% of our genes with chimpanzees and bonobo. That doesn't mean we're a bonobo. So we all have some genes that are in common. In fact, we might have some genes in them. I didn't find any of my Jewish genes or any of my genes to be Jewish. But the fact that that is, and if that's such a slight percentage, doesn't make any difference. I'm not really concerned about purity at all. I'm really concerned about whether somebody looks white or looks of our people is our people. I'm not opposed to people who are not of our people. I certainly, you know, want to preserve our particular genetic heritage, the way we look, the way we feel, the way we think, the culture that comes out of that, the personality that comes out of that, obviously, like all people do. So I don't look at this like a supremacy. I don't look at this like we're better than everybody else. I don't necessarily believe that. In fact, even if somebody's on the higher range of intelligence, doesn't make them better than the other person. In fact, the person that's highly intelligent but is a shithead, you know, a criminal, or a pervert or whatever, you know, he's not going to be judged as a good person in my book. So the fact the person might be intelligent, or the fact that they may be physically attractive or whatever, or physically, that's not the important things. What you're going to judge a person in many ways is by your character and what you do. Now, these other characteristics, like the Greek characteristics and the Roman characteristics and the German characteristics and the Spanish and the French and the British and all, the Irish, are so... they're important and they're valued. The Turkish people really value their ancestry. The Iranians value their ancestry. In fact, they think of themselves as Aryans. And there are many actual blondes and light-eyed people there, too. The Palestinians, I met many Palestinians of very light eyes when I was in Palestine. And and across the Middle East. So it's, so saying these things, it's really kind of nice to know your ancestry. And understand that these ancestries, the reason why there's a diversity in the world, and we look the way we do, and Africans look the way they do, and Asians look the way they do, Japanese, etc., is because of the fact that they were separate. And they inbred, and they have these common traits. And we do know that people with common traits tend to have more stable, peace-loving, right, and less tumultuous, and less hateful societies, less struggles and genocides and horrors that exist. And that kind of makes sense, I think. the reason why there are races is because of geographic separation over long periods of time. Now, a lot of that's changed by modern migration, modern transportation, all these other factors today. But that doesn't change the fact that the countries, generally speaking, in the world, that are more alike and similar in terms of their genetics and their traditions and their heritage and their culture and their religion and everything else tend to be far more peaceful. And I think peacefulness and cohesion and unity and feeling of brotherhood that exists in the country because you have the same feelings and the same values, the same traditions. We honor your ancestors. This is not a bad thing. It's a thing valuable to any people in the world, whether we're white or black or Asian or whatever we are, Amerindian, whatever we are. And but those are just some constant things. The problem is that when white people want to preserve the way we look, the way we feel, the way we think, our values, our culture, our faith, and we want to continue to be a majority in our own country, we're looked upon like racists. Jews can move into Palestine, where no Jews lived for 2,000 years. So they have no right to the land. They have no right to nothing. They kill the people. They kick them out. They murder them. They torture them in their prisons. And now they're committing a genocide in this open-air prison called Gaza. And they get away with it, and America supports it. The same American government run by Jews, by the way, the same Jews that support Israel with our tax money and support and have spent trillions of dollars in wars for Jews, like the Iraq War, which is a war for Israel, that same government is actively trying to make white people minority, not only in the United States of America, but in Canada and in Europe. And they use the power of America to try to create that. So it's really interesting to see this hypocrisy. The fact is, the most racist group of people, the most racist race, you might say, in the world, and the most similar race in terms of sharing the most of their genes, the average Jew is about one, is like a fifth cousin. Ever of the Jew, the average person in the world has maybe a 200-to-1 chance or 300-to-1 chance or 500-to-1 chance, depending on where they are, to be a fifth cousin to some unknown person they meet on the street. But Jews, not only do they have the most racist religion, a religion based on race and based on ethnic and personal and actually racial supremacy, And the fact that they believe God chose them over all others. Thank God we Christians don't believe that, and the Muslims don't believe that. The Muslims believe that if you follow the words of God, what they feel is written in the Quran, and a Christian feels if you follow the word of Jesus Christ, you are the chosen, and you are, you're the blessed of God. So that, but Jews aren't like that. They can be atheists in Jewry because Israel, Judaism itself is about its Jewish race, and it's about Jewish hegemony and Jewish supremacy over the world, and that's totally opposed to what Jesus Christ taught and what Christianity is supposed to be all about, by the way, and even Islam is supposed to be.
All right, let's Hold on, Richard. The question was about what DNA test to use. So let's just bring
.com, my answer.
Yeah, let's just bring Catherine in and let her say what she wants to say about this, and then we'll get to the next call. Go ahead, Catherine.
Well, when it comes to DNA testing, it depends on what you're doing. If you're an adoptee looking for your biological family, I suggest doing what is called fishing in every pond. I want you to test at 23andMe, Ancestry, Family Tree DNA. I want you to get your full mitochondrial tested. I want you to do the deluxe Y DNA test. You want as much data as you can possibly get. Now, just for the casual person, Ancestry, they have the biggest database, but there are other websites where when you gain more skills as a genealogist, you'll be able to do more with your results and raw data that you can actually download from Ancestry and upload to other sites like GEDmatch or to even other testing companies for different types of analysis. Not all companies test all markers, and it's important to understand what results you want to get. Ancestry, 23andMe, generally they test autosomal DNA, which is different from Y-DNA, which is passed only from men to all of their sons, or mitochondrial DNA, which is passed from a mother to all of her children, and X-DNA, which boys get, you know, one Y chromosome, one X chromosome, and, you know, girls, they have two X chromosomes, and they will pass one X down to all of their daughters and, you know, one X to their sons. And you can actually determine a lot with that X data, although
like it's a little historical chronology too, right?
Inheritance pattern.
Like you can determine when these genes came into your background, when they actually happened, what generation. You can determine all sorts of other factors as well. That's very fascinating.
For example, I happen to know that I share one full unchanged X in common with one of my second cousins. And because I know how that X was passed down, I know we got it from our shared third great grandmother.
Interesting.
Well, thank you very much for that, Catherine. Yeah, I mean, I was aware of, I think his name was Craig Pobb, and he was embarrassed by the local media. I think there was a host that said, you've got a little bit of black in you. And he disputed the findings. And it's often something that I found. I've got friends that say that they sent away for 33 and me, and they got 10% Jewish and 2% African.
Yes, but Craig Pobb's history that I've looked into. Right. Yes, I'm very aware of that gentleman.
Well, I'll let someone else come in. Thank you very much, David, and thank you very much, Catherine. Cheers, Gahari.
Remember,
thank you.
One last comment on this, I think
thank you,
very
Richard.
Important, because this is something that could throw people for a loop, and it's important maybe to address this for a second. I think Catherine would agree with me on this. She's welcome to comment on this too, because this is interesting. This is questions and answers for sure. But I do absolutely believe that it's all determining context. And because someone has a gene that is more common in a particular race, say more common in blacks than whites, are more common in whatever Icelandic people are. Let's just say Eskimos, right? And our Indians or Nepalese or whatever. Just because that happens doesn't mean necessarily that you are part Indian or whatever, because the truth is that there's actually thousands and thousands of genes that we share, even with our pet dogs and pet cats. and other mammals and mollusks or, you know, whatever, jellyfish. It's really kind of amazing, but we have in us these genes. So if they ever try to tell you you're part 2% black because you have these genes that blacks often have more than whites, it's not always meaning that you have any black blood. It's the fact is that these genes are so far back, they're inconsequential in terms of your heritage. Everybody.
Well, not just this. I would like to interject here and address something very important, which is how different databases assemble their base populations for comparison. For populations of people where very few have tested of such a population where their pedigree is well documented, because generally ancestry, they'll take a population of say 300 people that, you know, their family has lived in this one place and they can document that for, you know, several hundred years. And that's generally their preferred test-based population to which they'll start testing and comparing other DNA kits to. Mm-hmm. But if there's a problem with their sample population, then you could conceivably match to their population, even though you actually don't have any ancestry in common with them or that group. And right. This is something that a lot of people do not understand. Generally, if you have something that is less than 3% in your DNA results and you can't document that, that's a problem. You should absolutely be able to do so. That is within five generations back. You can absolutely track that down. If you had a non-white ancestor mm-hmm. sometime after 1800, you should be able to document that.
Yeah, you should be. And just one more thought,
Dave. We gotta get to the next call. But let me just say, Dave. Somebody's asking in the chat, how do people get in touch with Catherine?
Well, but she's not going to give that out over the air, but they can.
Do you have a website, Catherine?
No, she's not going to do that because her identity is she's using a pen name right now, obviously, they're going to object to some of the things that she's saying and she's doing.
I couldn't take anyone anyway. I have a 2-year-long wait list. I'm snowed under paperwork mountain, y'all.
Well, we want to get on the wait list before it gets any longer.
We can't, between you and me, we can certainly, and when we vet people ourselves and we know that they're okay, we could certainly get her some clients. She's expensive, but she's worth it because there's a lot of people, if they charge you by the hour and they charge you $100 an hour, but they take 10 hours. I've never seen anybody that when she spends an hour on you, it's like you get from 50 hours of some other people.
Right.
And she knows.
She's obviously amazing.
She's expensive, but she's worth it. I know that I can't help them. Genealogists are like doctors. We specialize. My specialty happens to be colonial American with an emphasis on Alabama and Tennessee and North Carolina, because that's where a lot of my ancestors are from. I have a lot of in-depth knowledge for the areas. And it's a whole, it can be very complicated. For example, if you're researching Anson County, North Carolina, and post 1750, you have to search over 100 counties in 5 different states to be sure that you have done a complete and thorough search for your ancestor. It can get very complicated very quick, depending on what you're looking for.
Yeah, it can. But one thing's for sure, folks, and this is a thing, even though I've got a lot of, I guess, distinguished ancestry, the further you go back, if you have some lineage you could trace back, if you can get into that, you know, the kingships and, where there were some of your ancestors. And again, you might be only 1/1,000,000th of that ancestry after a few, 50 generations or 100 generations. You may be very small in terms of your percentage of your ancestry. But the point is that once you get back into that, we're all so related. So there's millions and millions of people and millions of people of European descent. And I can say the same thing about people of black descent in black countries or Asian people who are very, 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 they're related to many, many famous people, because over the centuries when the population was low and now our population is big, that there's a lot of other people who are going to share what you think is a very special ancestry, which I think my ancestry is special, but so many of our people, some of the Europeans and others. And the Europeans are really good in terms of knowing this because we've had such good records for so long. Because civilization is the longest it's existed. It's been from the Fertile Crescent, the Middle East, and which was all a lot of European peoples originally. The Greeks, the...
Dave, got to take the top of the hour break.
Okay, we'll do
it. All right, we'll be back. All right. Okay, folks, this is Dave Gahary, and everyone's muted. So... you can only hear me, and it is right now. Let's take a look. Yes, it's exactly 7:00 Central Time, and you're listening to the Dave and Duke Call-In Show on SpeakFreeRadio.com, and it's been a great show so far. David's genealogist has been with us for the first hour, and terrific stuff, amazing. And we're going to get to the next caller. So Catherine, thank you. We'll get you back in. All right. So let's bring in Always Honest. Oh, go ahead, Always Honest. You've got the floor. Honest, are you there?
Hello.
Are you muted, Always Honest? All right. I think, there she is. Go ahead.
Hi, Dave. Hi, Dr. Duke.
Hi.
Hey.
That is an amazing genealogy for Dr. Duke. That's to be able to trace yourself back that far is really a gift, honestly. I was able to do something similar, and I was able to trace my family back to the 1600s into Turkey, of all places. So I thought that was really interesting.
Well, that was headquarters of the Byzantine Empire, so that was a very different land then, before the Ottoman.
It was. Absolutely. So my question is not about genealogy, it's about Israel and World War III.
Yes.
Do you think that we're in World War III right now and it's just a matter of time before they really do something dramatic and bring us into actual fighting, war, battle?
That's a really important question. Maybe it's the most important question for every one of us, everyone with a family, everyone who has kids they love, everyone who has relatives they love, people they love in their life, and who love life and want to live. I truly believe that we're living in the most dangerous time, the most dangerous, every minute that ticks by is one of the most dangerous minutes in the history of mankind. Even before men were men, so to speak, even before civilization and agriculture and all those things, because we face possible extinction, and a nuclear war could easily do that. There's no way that you can exaggerate the threat, and that nuclear war would be to our survival. It would especially be damaging and threatening to the existence of the Northern Hemisphere, which is most of the European, where the most of the Europeans live by far. Most of the Southern Hemisphere is mostly non-Europeans. If we do have a nuclear war, the prospect of this, I could go on all the details. I've studied this extensively, and it would be certainly be an existential crisis for the entire world. I think it would be like thousands of volcanoes going off. You can have two volcanoes can charge, cause tremendous real climate change, more than what they're saying about what's going on with the man-made carbon emissions and so forth. But it really is a dangerous time. And we got a bunch of crazy Jews, I hate to say it, at the helm, who have hegemony over the United States. And I think Russia is trying to avoid that. It's not Russia that expanded to the West. It's NATO that expanded to the East because the Jews don't like Russia. And just like they really don't like Ukraine. And I know that you were talking about, you even mentioned the Ukraine war and the danger of war. Do I think we're going to go to nuclear war? We're in a sense in a preamble to World War III. And I hope to God that Russia doesn't even do a test bomb in the atmosphere to show the West that they're serious. But maybe that's the only thing that will make the West realize that, my God, this is real. That if we actually had exchange of nuclear weapons in the cities of Europe and Russia and America and Canada and the rest of the world, that everybody's life would change. Even the people that weren't affected by the blast themselves or had terrible burns and DNA damage and all that from the radiation and the other aspects of it. There'd be radiation in the atmosphere, radioactive dust that would be flooding everyone. There'd be enormous horrors, and there would be complete breakdown of society, dog-eat-dog world, and those that did survive. And you wouldn't even be able to live underground, but you could go for a few months, but machines break down, you know, and parts break. And when you lose the active power and you lose all these things and things stop working, you can't stay underground forever. And it takes a long, long time for radiation, other things like that to dissipate. So even if you could get away from it for a while, it would be a horrible existence. What you did exist. And like it's been said by so many different people that, the living will envy the dead in a sense. So, yes, I think there's a great danger for this because I think these Jews, they've always overextended themselves. But in this particular case where they have atomic weapons in Israel, where these Jews literally have the ability right now, they got a demented president right now. They got a chief of staff who's a Jew, Mr. Zients, same one that gave us the COVID crap. Before that, it was another Jew. And six or seven cabinet ministers are Jews. And I guarantee you that they got access to any of the codes the president has. In fact, they would probably have to give him the code because the guy can't even recognize his wife. So if they decide to bomb any country or to get involved in nuclear war, thinking it's going to be a limited war, it's probably not going to be limited. Once this thing starts, it's almost impossible for not to go crazy. But the problem is Jews have, you know, they've been moved. They've moved in any countries, but they never know when to stop. They always go extreme. But in this case, if they go extreme, it's the end of all of us, including Jews. But that there's really a very big danger of that. And I think it's the greatest threat to humanity. And not only are nuclear weapons at stake here, but we know because of a London Times article that was done around 1999, that was done by whistleblowers, Jewish whistleblowers, who dared to expose what's going on at Dahman Research Facility. They're making biological weapons, too, that can target people on the basis of their race. Now, I'll give you one more example and to close, and this also deals with Ukraine, which is a current event, as well as what's going on in Gaza. Of course, they're doing genocide in Gaza for sure. All are in part of a racist genocide. It's not just about wiping out a race entirely. By that definition, you can say that what happened to the Jews in the Second World War wasn't genocide because there was no way they could wipe out all the Jews in the world. They weren't wiping out all the Jews in the world. But the whatever you say about the Holocaust. But the point is that Jews have hated Ukraine for years. You can go to My Jewish Learning. They talk about the Cossacks. There's an article that I've quoted on my show, my daily show, from the Jerusalem Post by this Jewish writer who was from Ukraine. And he goes back to Ukraine to go to the statue of Chmelnitsky. Now, Chmelnitsky was one of the Cossack leaders, right, who defended Ukraine, right? And the Cossacks, you see, are actually the heroes of both Ukraine, what's called Belorussia or White Russia, and Russia. The Cossacks are just as revered in Russia. Now, Cossacks are hated by Jews because the Ashkenazi Jews that were in Eastern Europe at the time, they were fighting the Russians and fighting the Slavic peoples and killing a lot, torturing a lot. And there was a war between them for centuries. And they've never forgotten that. And the Cossacks were the warriors and the heroes of the Russians that fought against not only these Ashkenazi Jews, but they also fought against the Asiatic invaders, ultimately repulsed them and freed Eastern Europe and protected all of Europe from the invasions from the East. So here's the situation. I can show you, like this guy talks about going back to Ukraine to the statue of Chmelnitsky, and he talks about crossing into this traffic circle where the statue is. And he says that the traffic is very bad there. He says, I've taken my life in my hands, but I'm going to go to that statue just so I can spit on the statue to the Ukrainian patron, Saint Chmelnitsky. And Ukraine is based on the whole Cossack myth. And it's not a myth and it's a lie. It's part of it, just their culture, just like Cossacks are revered by the Russians too, which shows you the connection between Russians. The Kievan Rus were in fact part of the Russian Empire as well. I mean, Russia is actually, we talk awful a lot about Sevastopol, we talk about Crimea. Russia, Crimea.
Dave, we got to get to the next call.
That's 1786, which was before that, I think, or 1778 or something like that, which was before the Constitution of the United States as part of Russia. The people of Ukraine and Russia are very similar, but the Jews hate the people of Ukraine, and they're getting two for one in this Ukraine war. They're killing a lot of Russians, but they're even killing even more Ukrainian, quote-unquote, Nazis, who they call Nazis, because they're happy to see both of these European Christian peoples die. They did this. Now, the Russians had no choice, because it was either the Russians fight them or they get nuclear missiles on their very border 2 minutes away from their capital. I mean, they had no choice in doing this, but they're the ones who brought this war. And they brought this war not in 2022, they brought this war in 2014. And they've killed 16,000 Eastern Ukrainians. And they're happy to do that killing. And they killed 500,000 Ukrainians. So this is a war against Ukraine. It's a war against Europe. It's destroying the economy of Europe. It's certainly done great harm to Russia as well, and it's doing harm to this world. And we have to understand these things. And we have to understand this war is not about anything for Ukraine. It's about fighting for Jewish interests and killing the goyim. Even I think Even the incredible Norman Finkelstein, you know, the guy that wrote The Holocaust Industry about the frauds of the Holocaust, even he says the same kind of thing, that this Jewish supremacism is the greatest threat to the world. He says you can't even call it Zionism. It's Jewish supremacism at root. You can call it many things, but it's Jews that think they're better than anybody else, and they have a right to rule us all. That's the biggest danger. You can go to the next caller.
Thank all right. You. Thanks, Dave. Thank you. Thanks, Always Honest. We'll get... Thank you.
It's a scary thing. I hate to dwell on these dark things here, but sometimes right. It's important. Maybe
our good
about this possibility
friends
of life on Earth and life in Europe
are attacking us
by these things. Right. We have to think about these things because we have to work to stop this. It's never more important. Our work that we're doing right now, your work, Dave, and the work of everybody listening in terms of educating the world on this danger of Jewish supremacism is the most important time in our lives and maybe the most important time in the lives of all of our ancestors from the beginning of time.
I agree. Yes, absolutely. Okay, we got Jimmy. Jimmy from beautiful St. Louis, Missouri.
Yeah, you got it. Man, that's amazing stuff, you guys, talking about both of you. And I did listen to you last night on Ryan Masano's show, Dave, and that was amazing stuff you had to say about yourself, too. That was a long thing. Well, it was last night Dave Gaharry was talking with Ryan Masano, talking about a lot of history with the submarines and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
For Dave. But, yeah, it's great to listen about both of you guys. And, you know, but, yeah, I got sidetracked halfway through the show, so I got to get back and see the podcast. But yeah, I was talking to some guys that came by to show me their 69 Grand Prix that they just got, and they just wanted to show it to me. But I just started talking about Jews nice. And showed them all this stuff and the show and stuff. And, man, I went through so much Jew stuff with them. And I agree with everything you just said about it. Like, there's nothing more important. But these guys, you know, I mean, they just took it like as if I might be going crazy and don't, you know, get too far into it.
Easy with them. You got it's like this. You know, you can't eat an elephant in one bite.
You know,
it's a big elephant. It's a mammoth. Jewish power is a mammoth. You got to just feed them a spoonful at a time and take it easy with them. And you try to use something that can't be refuted, something that you can prove. Like if you want to say the New York Times is our leading paper, it's controlled by Jews, all you got to do is show them two documents. You can go to my Gab and you can pick up the document that's showing the people who own the New York Times. They're all Jews, been that way since 1895. And then you can just show them just a couple of the headlines of the New York Times, right? For instance, you can show them a headline from a couple of years ago with a big picture of Karl Marx, the father of communism. And communism is an ideology that's killed 100 million people. And an ideology, by the way, created by Jews, spread by Jews. Even to China, it was spread by Jews. And Jews boast about this and brag about this. But this communism killed 100 million people. That was according to a universal unanimous resolution by the United States Congress, even under the Clinton years. I mean, there's literally a resolution to that effect, and it's true. So the truth is that we have to really understand clearly what's happening here. So how can, you know, if you think that America is not controlled by Jews and America is not controlled by enemies of Christianity, enemies of freedom, you know, by enemies of freedom in every respect, you know, just show them a picture. Get yourself an inkjet printer as cheap as hell and just get an inkjet printer, print up that full page article from the Times. You just show a small version of it saying that, you know, happy birthday, Karl Marx. You were right. That's what it says. Picture Karl Marx.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Karl Marx. Show him a picture. Show a picture of Mr. Cohen's article.
Yeah, I do, Dave. You know, I got tons of stuff on my phone, tons of stuff on my computer.
You can't show them everything at one time.
It's yeah.
Overwhelming. But just take it easy with them and then try to discuss one thing at a time before they go to another subject. Right.
Right.
And that's what I have. That's how I would suggest to do it. And because these are friends you'll be seeing again, just take it easy, step by step. Right. And when something happens that occurs to you, you might call them up one day and say, did you see this? Did you see that? All right?
Well, Dave, you know, when Dave Gaharri starts the show and he says you're the best orator of this stuff, it's true. I mean, you're real smart and you're real measured. And, I mean, you know, I can't think of all the words, but you are the best guy to be talking about the Jew stuff and everything. You're real smart at a lot of stuff, man.
Well, I hope I can not only do I think I have a lot of knowledge about the Jews, but I think I can help you. I've done seminars before back in my old days, even when I was in the Klan years ago and the Euro organization. We used to do all day long seminars, or I just taught people how to proselytize, how to teach our friends, how to wake up our friends and family, the best way to do it. And sometimes we'd even do like situations where we do mocks, where we would pretend that the person across us in the room was a family member or another friend at school. And we'd come up with objections, we'd come up with whys, and we'd teach people, you know, how to argue this thing. Because having the truth is not enough by itself, right? And another good example is you also got to learn how to tailor your arguments to what's important to people. I'm sure in your life you have a lot of very devout Christians who love Jesus Christ and who are Christianity is a very much part of their life, right?
Yeah.
So it's important for that they understand the fundamental teachings of Jesus Christ and how the teachings of Jesus Christ are on what we talk about, what you talk about, what I talk about here on the show every day, right? That, you know, the main message Jesus sent, and which Christians believe was sent by God through his son, you know, was the golden rule. And when they talk about the summary of Christ's teachings in the New Testament, they clear it, and you can get the passages yourself. And it says the teachings is, unlike the time of the Torah, the fulfillment of the law was Christ coming to earth and saying, it's not this rule, the golden rule, does not just apply to your fellow Jews. It applies to everyone, not just Jews, but Greeks and Romans and all people. And everybody is equal in the eyes of God. Everyone can have the salvation of Jesus Christ. And there's no idea in this that you've got to somehow you've got to subvert yourself to Jewish dictatorship. And the interesting thing is the same Jews that want to dominate the world, right? And they do dominate the world. And they bring us to all these horrible wars. By the way, there was no wars under Christ. The only time you got violence was when you turned the money changers' tables, right? The usurers in the temple. That's the only time you got violence. There's no massacres of anyone, all right? No massacres. He didn't say kill the children. He said, you know, let the children come unto me. I'll give you one quote because we don't have time to go on this for an hour or a few minutes. I'll give you one quote again that's very important, I think, to understand these things, okay? So one quote is, and this comes from Thessalonians, and it's an amazing quote that tells you so much because it tells you exactly what the reality is. And you, when you hear this quote, I'd like you to think a little bit about what the Palestinians are going through and what we're going through. So the quote goes like this, all right? It's really kind of fascinating. I want to pull it up for you so I get it right out of the Bible. Here it is. Here it's coming, right? So it says, here it comes. And the Jews crucified our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, and killed the prophets, and despise and hate all mankind. The Jews drove us out of our land. Or just like they're driving us out of our cities by their policy. They're driving us out of our countries by their immigration policies. Look what they did to the Palestinians. They drove us out, right? And they keep us from preaching to the Gentiles so they might be saved. Now, whether you talk about that being saved in terms of your soul for eternal life, or whether you talk about that being saved in terms of the well-being of your children, that was keeping maybe their organs intact on their body, not being a pedophile's predatory prize, right, by the promotion of homosexuality and destroying our ability to defend ourselves from homosexuality. Whether you talk about saving from the terms of saving our country, our freedom, our principles, or not, you're talking about something that's so vital. And if you read that quote from Thessalonians, you realize that this is an old, old story. And this was why Jesus was crucified. They wanted someone, right, to be a conqueror and conquer the world for the Jews. And that means conquering Greeks and Romans and Assyrians and, my God, everybody in the world, and let Jews rule over them. That's what the Jews expected, because Judaism got more and more radical. The reason they hated Christ is because he taught that the golden rule now had to apply to everybody. And that's why they hated Jesus Christ. So I'm going to give you that passage one last time. This is from Thessalonians 1. He says, I've got the King Version, King James Version. I've got the New Standard, Revised Standard this Version. I've got all the versions. They come in a little bit different wording, but it's all about the same. Quote, For ye, brethren, became followers of the churches of God. You know, you became Christians, right? Which in Judea are in Christ Jesus, as they are here. And he was talking from Corinth or in Turkey, I think Paul was. But you also suffered those things of your own countrymen, even as they have of the Jews who killed both the Lord Jesus and their own prophets and have persecuted us. And they please not God and are contrary to the will and the morals of all men, forbidding us to speak to the Gentiles that they might be saved, to fill up their sins. For the wrath, finally, the Lord's wrath, God's wrath has come upon them to the uttermost. And I think the reverses that Israel is now finding and the peoples are learning about the genocide of Israel, I think this is basically they're feeling the wrath of God, and they're feeling the truth about these Jewish genociders are coming out to all of us. So that's it. And then, by the way, Paul said some really interesting things preceding that. I know the history. I don't know just the verses and the fact. And he was talking about the fact that, look, I'm coming to you, and this is in what today is Turkey. I'm coming to you not to make money. We're not making any money. I'm not come to take advantage of you. I'm not coming to tell you what to do. I'm coming to bring you, and we're coming to bring you the word of God, which will help you and will free you and will help you have a better life and will help you have eternal life. Yeah, that was still, he said, listen, and to show you the difference between Jewish attitude and...
Dave, we got to get to the next call.
Last sentence and we'll be done. The Jewish attitude is about killing everybody. It doesn't go along with this. But he says, quote, but we were very gentle with you, like a mother caring for her little children, because we loved you. We were happy to share not only God's good news to you, but even your own lives, because your lives were suspect and at risk from the Jews. That's exactly what's going on with the possible nuclear war. It's exactly what's going on to the guys that died in Iraq. It's exactly what's going on to the Palestinians who are both Christians and Muslims who are being killed and murdered by these Jews. And the same thing with the Christians in Syria, and the same thing with the Christians of Europe, which they're trying to destroy. So there we go. I thought I needed to complete that. I think I did.
Yep, that was good.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. The Jews don't change their playbooks.
Right.
All right, Jamie, we'll get you back in, buddy.
Okay.
Thanks, man. Okay, let's bring in your cousin Vinny from Indiana. Go ahead, Vinny.
Hello, David and Dave. Hey, before I get to my question, I want to start off. You mentioned things that we can do to maybe that might be positive in this very grim time. Father's, you know, a month ago before Mother's Day, I mentioned something, and I'll mention it again because Father's Day is coming up. Probably the best thing that we can do to help get our message out is getting people off of legacy corporate Electric Rabbi, Controlled Media. Biggest, probably the worst thing is promoting ultra Zionism. It's AM/FM radio. You know, a Bluetooth adapter in the cigarette lighter, or getting rid of that old radio in dad's car, you know, because that stuff is just totally toxic. And getting, I'll give you an example. Also, getting family members off of Fox News or MSNBC it would be really good. I mean, get them on to even YouTube would be a big improvement, because like Dave Gahari, you're going to be amazed. Jimmy Dore, I mean, used to be on MSNBC. His YouTube show, he did a half hour interview.
Great show.
He did a half hour interview.
Yeah, with Turney,
the guy from the USS Liberty.
Yeah,
yeah, amazing, and right? You know, fantastic.
That's amazing. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, the word's spreading. The word is spreading.
Yeah, and that's right. And that's and by the way, it's so important that we understand, because we've got to carry the truth to people, because they're going to try so much misinformation to misdirect us. For instance, they'll say stuff like, well, really, Jews are not in favor of Israel. And they'll say all these Jews. Well, some Jews are not in favor of Israel. And thank God for them. And I appreciate that. And it helps us tell people, because when you see a Jew whistleblowing on the Jews, it's more convincing than somebody who has a special interest in it, because we're the one being put upon, or the Palestinians are being put upon. But the truth is that the Jewish establishment is completely, completely dominated by Jews like the ones creating the genocide, because mainstream media is supporting this genocide. Mainstream media is supporting Israel. Mainstream media is trying to get people on college campuses that are opposing this genocide to be fired from the university, destroyed, their career interrupted and destroyed. The college dorm rooms that they paid for in advance, lose them, right? And to get people sent home to the countries in which they came from, that they came and they paid the tuition, most people, and to send them back home. They even had a law in Congress these Jews are trying to pass, by these stupid, idiotic, anti-Christ Christians, who said, that if you demonstrate against Israel, we're going to send you to Gaza for 6 months. These people are insane, right? So, I mean, it's amazing to think about, but it's like we have to – this is the most important times of your life and my life and our children's lives and our children's children's lives than ever before they existed in history. And we can get a lot of guidance, and I think we can get a lot of inspiration from the teachings that are in the New Testament. Because if you really look at the New Testament, it is absolutely a repudiation of what Judaism had become.
Well, that leads to my question, because, yeah. Okay, Pat, first of all, Jimmy Dore is an Irish Catholic, but some of his second bananas are Jewish. That is true. Yeah. Last week, you had a 20-minute conversation with Mike from Nebraska, and he's a very intelligent, very, you know, well-read kind of very Christian fundamentalist guy.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. I disagreed a little.
But, you know, a point that Patrick Slattery makes all the time is that there's lots of people who have been influenced by David Duke, even if they can't directly say it. And, for example, like, I've been listening to you for 10 years. And, you know, and I know for probably 40 or 50 years, you've been making the point that the Old Testament, you know, it's important to Christian fundamentalists, but to Jews, it really isn't very important. The Talmud is the core document.
Exactly.
And that was the point that, you know, Kevin McDonald, you know, until he got out of academia, he could say, yeah, I heard him listening to all these guys who gave me insights on Jews, but I always thought, you know, he didn't realize till many years later, and, you know, he's credited you with that. But this guy, this Mike from Nebraska, the point that I would make is, if Jews hear, when they hear Christian fundamentalists talk about the Old Testament, they laugh at them, because to Jews, the Old Testament is a political document.
It's only five short books.
Yeah, it's a political treatise.
Called the Torah.
It's a political treatise to ground the the Jews as the chosen people. They took all the myths of the ancient world when the Seleucid Empire wanted to Hellenize the different people, all the different Semitic peoples of their empire. And the rabbis got in there. They wrote the Septuagint, and it put Jews at the center of narratives, which were borrowed from all the different cultures across the entire empire, from all these people who weren't Jews. And yet they put them at the center of the story, and then we're the chosen people. It's a political document.
We're the chosen, you're not.
Yeah, it's a political document.
Right. But here's the situation, and I understand that a lot of us, it's hard to understand all these things, the Old Testament, New Testament. But we do know, if you read the Old Testament very closely, you realize the times that God was so put out with people, he destroyed whole peoples. And he was about ready to destroy the Jews after he rescued them out of the land of Egypt, according to the Old Testament. And even according to the Jewish scribes that wrote all these things down. And again, it's very hard to know what should be in that Old Testament or should be in the Torah and what should not be. And I know that people want to think that every word is like inscribed by the breath of God. But we know that real men, just as they make mistakes when they copy things, or just like when, you know, or they get corrupt or they get emotional or whatever, they add things. They're copying things all day long forever, and they're copying many hand manuscripts. And we find many contradictions in many of the manuscripts because people make mistakes when they write. But Jews were able to choose what manuscripts, what scriptures they wanted to. And they wanted to choose the scriptures that promoted not what Jews necessarily were in those times and those are first scriptures, but what Jews had become. And Jews had become more and more and more racist. And they had what they call the oral tradition. Now, the oral tradition was maintained by the Pharisees and Sadducees, and they were totally radical Jewish supremacists, right? And that's the reality of what Judaism became. And don't forget, like, even the promise of, you know, that you will, you know, you'll be my chosen people till the end of time, to whatever. He said, unless you break my commands to you, unless you disobey me. Now, how many times, you can read the Old Testament, you can read about Sodom and Gomorrah, supposedly Jewish areas that were devastated because of the homosexuality and the destruction. You can read about where Moses was told by God that he's going to kill all you Jews, because look how evil you are and what you're doing. But what happens is God, if you're a Christian, just read the New Testament. You don't have to read anything else. Just read the New Testament and read the words of Jesus Christ and read the words of the disciples and read what the New Testament has to say. And there are no massacres of other peoples. There's a call for love and peace and kindness. And even Jesus goes to the adulterous woman, because the Jewish law was that she must be stoned to death. And Jesus said, okay, you guys, you were the first without sin. You throw the first stone here at this woman. And then he didn't say that he condoned the adultery. But Jesus produced the thing of we're all sinful. And he said, you can be forgiven. And so he asked the woman, will you go and sin no more? She said, yes, of course, master. And thank you, master. I love you. And I believe in you. And, you know, and he saved her life, right? But when he did that, he broke the Jewish law. Okay. He broke Jewish laws. When he told the person working on his house about Sabbath, he broke the Jewish law. When Christ healed people, and when the apostles healed people on the Sabbath, the Jews said, you guys are devils because you broke the Jewish law, because the Jewish law was that healing someone is work on the Sabbath. And Christ said, no, you have to look at it this new. What we're teaching now is the true word of God. So what Jesus taught was that anybody who accepts Christ, he said specifically, New Testament, it says this. Just read it, folks. Look it up in the Bible Gateway. It says, quote, it's not the people of the sent, but the people of the promise who are the chosen of God today, who are sons of the living God. In other words, if you believe in Christ, now that is completely a fulfillment, if you want to put it that way, of the Old Testament, showing that it, when Christ came to earth, according to real Christian theology, which we all believed until the Second World War, till the Jews took over everything, including the cable networks, where they only allowed preachers on to tell them you got to worship thy Jew, not worship Christ, not worship the teachings of Christ, not worshiping the way that Christians had worshiped since the time of Christ. Read the quotations of the popes. Read the quotations of the first great Protestant, Martin Luther. Read the quotations of Calvin, the man who started Christianity. Read our Christian ancestors. We didn't have this love affair with Jews until now. And they've done this. They've made Christian Zionism, not because this was a natural thing of Christianity. Otherwise, all these Christians were wrong for the last 2,000 years. No, they did this because Jews took over their minds, which corrupted their minds, right? So God sent his only son. This is, and I'm not saying, a lot of people I don't believe this. And I know that, you know, I'm a Christian. I choose to believe it. I can't prove any of this because scientifically it's hard to prove something like that. But you know what? I can choose to believe it. And I choose to believe that when the Bible says, the New Testament says, that Christ sent Jesus to the earth, his only begotten son, to tell us how to reach God and to give us a clearance, to give us an acceptance, to give us forgiveness, and to teach us how to live our lives. That's all I need to know. I don't need to be confused by something in the Old Testament. All I know is that Jesus Christ preached every day of his life peace and love and kindness. And he specifically said, there's not any Romans or Greeks when it comes to believing in Christ. There's not any Romans, Greeks, or Jews, or Samaritans, or Amalekites, any other people which were relatively killed in the Old Testament. Christ, basically, I believe, was sent by God, and I think that this is the Christian point of view. This is the overwhelming view of Christianity until now, until Jews took over everything in Hollywood and everything in terms of our academia and everything in terms of the powerful government forces in this world. Until then, every Christian believed that Jesus Christ was sent by God to bring us a message of what God wants for us. And because Jews had gone away from God, they crucified Jesus Christ because they knew that Jesus wasn't preaching what they wanted, which was Jewish supremacism. They wanted Jewish supremacism. Christ wanted salvation in Jesus Christ for everyone in the world and the treatment of every human being, like all of us, brothers and sisters, not just fellow Jews, and that Jews couldn't stand that. And as I quoted from Thessalonians a few minutes ago, and this is my last thing I want to say in this moment, in that Thessalonians, it says really clearly, right, the Jews drove us out and despise all mankind, but God's wrath has come upon them at last. And they also keep us from teaching to the Gentiles they must be saved. And any Jews that want to be saved, there are some Jews, I think, who understand all these things. And those, you know, I'd say thank you. And I say, I respect you. I'm not against all Jews. But I tell you one thing. The organized Jew is the same organized Jew that crucified Christ and is now promoting everything the Christian church and Christians oppose in America and all over the world. And they're promoting all these things by supporting the Jewish establishment and the state of Israel, which is the epitome of evil.
Dave, we got to get to the next call.
We're destroying and we're going against the word of Jesus Christ. And I hope that Christians can get that message. And I hope you can share that with your Christian brothers and sisters, whether or not you're Christian. You know, just ask them about these things. Quote, learn the New Testament simply as a book of history or a book of doctrine and share it with your Christian brothers, even if you're not a Christian. All right. That's fine. Just ask.
All right. Vinny, thanks, buddy. We'll get you back in the lightning round.
You got it.
Thank you.
Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, man.
I think that was a good little section.
Okay. So let's start doing the lightning round. Then we're going to bring, if it's okay, we'll bring, yeah, absolutely. We'll bring Catherine back in.
Yeah.
She's there. Let's bring in Richard. Lightning round, Richard.
Hello. Yes, Richard, great. Well, it's been a great show so far. I mean, I guess my
go ahead, buddy.
Is, are you up for a after show tonight, Duke?
Not very long tonight, as you can tell. Congestion, but I'll try to stay a little while. So have your questions ready, and I'll try to deal with them.
Great stuff,
Catherine. I guess some questions too.
sure. I mean, my only question, I guess, is what are your thoughts on the Society of St. Pius the X? I think it is SSPX. That's my only question. Thank you very much, Dave Gahari and David Duke. Cheers.
Well, you know, I've heard different things about that society. Before I answer that question, you tell me succinctly what you feel the basic principle of that society is.
Well, I mean, you mentioned an interesting point in the sense that I know many Catholics argue that the, E. Michael Jones, he points to the fact that after Vatican II, there was an apology given by the Catholic Church for blaming Jews for the death of Christ. They officially, I think, receded their statute blaming Jewry for the death of Christ. And this is something that many Catholics especially, but I suppose Christians as a whole, do largely associate with Judaism. And so that's a change there. But Society of St. Pius X, as I understand it, they are sedevacantists, which is the argument that since 1961, 62, whenever Vatican II came into effect, mm-hmm. There is officially no pope. And a pope is the official representative of Christ on earth. So I think that it's the idea that they don't accept that papal see has an occupant, I guess. That's how I understand it.
I understand what you're saying. And I thank you for laying that out, because I'm sure 99% of our listeners all over the world don't know exactly what the Society of St. Pius, and you explained it perfectly. And I certainly, how I understand it, and I would agree with what you're saying, and I would agree with the idea that some of the leadership of the Catholic Church has lost its way. I like the fact that they defend our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, and I think they preach a lot of his message. Sometimes they go a little bit crazy in that message too. Now, when Christ was talking about turn the other cheek, and that was really, I think that was more, there's two different ways you could look at that. Like, for instance, you can look at that as individuals. And most of the times that when you need to turn the other cheek is by people that in your life that you're connected to, family members, parents, your children, brothers and sisters, relatives. Let's not fight over the will, so to speak, you know, and just people within countries, because the people who are around each other are much likely, more likely to do crimes, even violence, than strangers, even though that can happen as well. But I don't think there's anything in the Bible that says that you don't have the right to defend your country if you're invaded, or you don't have the right to be physically defensive of your child. To turn your other cheek's one thing, but I don't think they would say, oh, okay, you're going to rape my little girl or little boy. Here, take my little child too, right? Go ahead and rape them. No, because Christ constantly spoke about loving each other, protecting each other, nurturing each other, that God was a heavenly father, that God wanted us to be kind to not only our family members, but to people in general. Now, a people of other nations, that means a peacemaker. Christ said, blessed are the peacemakers. He didn't say that a country doesn't have the right to defend its freedom, defend its existence by some other people that want to wipe them out. You know, I mean, seriously. But in the process of doing that, that you've got to do this in a just way, and you've got to do this kindly, and you've got to understand that, you know, that you, so I don't think there's any contradiction to any of this stuff, but I do believe very strongly that the message of Jesus Christ was a message that is not shared by Judaism. In fact, I'll put it this way to you, and I think it's a very important point and a good one for this show, because we're almost to the end anyway.
Dave, make this the last point, then we got to get to the next one.
I think it's really important to completely understand what's at stake here. And what is at stake? You know, it's life. It's living. It's the well-being of your children. It's the well-being of your... Christ even said the Sabbath, not working the Sabbath doesn't mean anything if your family needs that house to stand. I mean, there's another section, too. what is the why are we going to have a law that you can't heal somebody on the Sabbath when somebody doesn't have any eyesight, or he's going to die and the kids are going to lose their father, or their father's going to lose their children? Are you telling me that that's more important because of some Jewish law? He believed in the idea that God gives us this moral sense, and you should trust the moral sense that God bears you with, because this is the sense that I give you, a loving God, and you'd be loving people and do what's right and just in these cases and not be simply a slave to this Jewish law that's often a tyranny and a repressive law. Just like the Old Testament says, you can keep your slaves forever and ever and ever. I don't think any Christian believes that today, but because Christ doesn't teach that, you know, and and by the way, that same verse in the Old Testament.
All right, says, Dave, let's get to the next.
Treat them with harshness, but you can't treat your fellow Jews with harshness. The New Testament says if you have a slave, and that was the way of the times back then, you have to treat them kindly as well, right? And share the teachings of Christ as well. Jews don't teach their
All right, thanks, Richard. Thanks, buddy.
They don't want them to be in the Jewish religion.
Okay, we'll see you in the after show.
Okay.
Yeah. Stop picking on the Jews. Okay, let's get in Militia Nick. I passed over him by mistake. I'm sorry, Nick. You know I didn't do that on purpose.
I know. I'll just quickly give me 1 minute. We talked about Queen St. Margaret of Scotland. Yeah. This great and saintly princess and queen was the granddaughter of King Edmund Ironside of England. She was the wife of King Malcolm III of Scotland, whose father Duncan was murdered by the noted Macbeth. There never was a more royally holy woman, wife, and widow than St. Margaret. Of her 8 children, 2 of her sons became monks. 1 of her daughters became a queen, married King Henry I of England, and because of her heroically holy life, was, like her mother, a saint. Her name was St. Matilda, and she is known in history as Good Queen Maud. And I'll be looking for Catherine's comments after I finish here.
Yeah.
St. Margaret of Scotland was a relative of St. Stephen of Hungary. She was only 43 years old when she died. She thanked God for the afflictions he sent her in her illnesses. She spent hours and hours in prayer and was always grateful to God for every gift she had received. Her beautiful grace after meals is known as St. Margaret's Blessing. St. Margaret is the patroness of Scotland.
Oh, I'm glad you brought her up for a second, because I have a comment for you about her. You know, it's like that. I didn't do anything to earn that. Okay. To earn that person being in my ancestry, but I'm thankful for that ancestry. And the way I feel when I read about an ancestor did great things, and she got her sainthood because she helped the poor, the downtrodden, the people who needed help in society. And sometimes we forget that Christianity is part of what we believe, that we want a healthy and whole society. And she dedicated herself to that, made great sacrifices for that, even in spite of her own afflictions. So here's what I feel about our ancestors, what our ancestors can do for us. And we all have some great ancestors in our ancestry, is we can let them inspire us and drive us to be better men or women, better family members, better members of our society, our country, our nation, our cities, our culture, our schools, on our lives, our churches, whatever. And that's how we should use it. It's not something that makes us better than anybody else or gives us any sort of privilege, but it's something, in a way, in a sense, it gives us more responsibility. If we have an ancestor that does these wonderful things and we recognize they do and we revere them for those things, then that makes it even more incumbent upon us, doesn't it, to try to live a holy life and live a life of meaning and purpose. And that's why I think it's really important for us to understand our ancestry. And all the peoples of Europe understood that. Vikings understood their ancestry, and they revered their ancestors. You know, Scots did. Irish did. Everybody did. Germans did.
Sure.
And we need that. And that's why I urge all of our people, that's part of your mental health, I think, is to understand that you have great. This is like Thomas Jefferson. The Jews try to run down Thomas Jefferson. They try to suggest to you he was having illegitimate kids to his maidservant or whatever in the house. And there's no evidence for that. There's no proof of that. It could have been his nephew, whatever, but I don't think it was Thomas Jefferson. And he reviled those attacks against him and thought it was the worst kind of insult anybody could ever make against anyone to do that. But the point I'm making by talking about this is Jews want to defile our ancestry because they don't want us to be proud of ourselves. They want us to hate ourselves because they want to weaken our resolve and think of ourselves as bad. So we even, in effect, even subconsciously wish for our own demise or destruction. And I've met a lot of people in my life, white people, who are smart people, but they've been taught to hate themselves. And I talked to the other day in the program, I'm almost done, on the little big man story with Dustin Hoffman about the settlers of the West. The most biggest anti-white hate fest. I mean, if those of you who have a stomach for it can actually watch that movie and just with an open mind and knowing what we know, just watch it, all the terrible demonic way they depict our ancestors, our settlers that made this great country Christians, and how they made the people who were killing them and the other people ought to be the good guys and our people ought to be evil bastards, you know. Because, and it's all just written, and half of the things in there are not even true. You know, they were just totally made up stuff. This is what they do. And this is why it's so important for us to understand our ancestry and to also try to let our ancestors inspire us to behaviors that are heroic and not debased.
Well, I mentioned in the chat, my last comment is that the patroness of Scotland's feast day is June 10th. So you could start a novena today and end on that feast if you follow the new Catholic Church.
Right.
That feast was moved to November 16th. So.
Well, I hope Catherine's still on with us so she can give us a comment about Queen of Scotland.
Yeah. Let's bring her in.
Oh, yes. I'm here. I'm just
go ahead,
thinking
Catherine.
About St. Margaret. When she died, both of her sons were fighting over the kingdom and she lost her husband. And she's said to have died of a broken heart.
Oh.
Now, you wanted to know about Maud of England. She ended up marrying into the William Conqueror line, and so she's a direct descendant of all the modern kings and queens of England mm-hmm. as a result of that.
I think William is one of my ancestors, too. I'm not sure.
Yes. That's your line, is through Maud.
You had mentioned that you wondered, one of the great mysteries was wondering why Queen St. Margaret of Scotland did not, because she was related to King St. Stephen of Hungary, why she didn't reclaim that crown, I guess, or
yes,
territory.
That's, some of the other mysteries is when...
Well, yeah, you've told me about that before. You remember?
Yes, when King Stephen died, St. Margaret, had Agatha been a princess of Hungary, would have had an undisputed claim to the Hungarian throne, so why didn't she take it?
All well, she had another kingdom that she
Agatha
was cared about.
The Gesta
right?
Hungarorum lists her as a kinswoman of Emperor Henry of the Holy Roman Empire, but no one's quite sure where she fits into the tree. I happen to think that the Russian hypothesis for Agatha is the most likely, making her a sister to St. Olga of Kiev, for whom Kiev in Ukraine is named. But that's just me. And as for the other mystery is...
And you think I have Russian ancestry a lot, too, because also people always say that to me. They say, man, you look like a Russian, or you look like a Viking or something. Of course, the Russians were Varangians, which they were from Sweden and Denmark and Norway.
Yes, people forget the early, you know, the Kievan Rus and the early Russian history and their contributions to Europe. We're in this mentality where we're just, oh, well, Russia isn't really... They're not really Europeans, and that is so not true.
Dave, do you have any Polish in you?
Yes, St. Ladislaus was the king of Poland. And speaking of Poland and the Jews...
Now, let me ask you, before you go on, I've got to get a clarification here.
Okay.
Yes, it's one thing to talk about a country, but remember in those years, in the Middle Ages, that these aristocrats were marrying cross-country all the time. And there were queens and kings in Russia that weren't so much Russian, maybe German, or maybe even had Scandinavian and other people. And the same thing is true in many countries. So saying that a king was the king, the Ladislaus of Poland, doesn't mean that he was Polish in terms of the specific genetic tribe that was the primary genetics of Poland. Now, is that right or wrong, or what do you think?
Huh? Yeah. He did marry Riksa of Poland, though.
Yeah, well, that's... So, and that was part of my ancestry out of that.
Yes.
So I'm part Polish, folks, even though... Now, that far back, now that's a long time back. That's back to what century? That's back to the time of the Crusades, First Crusade.
Yes. Don't ask me these questions without my fan charts in front of me. I tell you, you start researching and then you're thousands of people's
But the point deep, is,
and then all the dates start running together. The truth is
that would make me, you know, my ancestry from him a tiny percentage in that many generations. It'd be like a fraction.
I think he's like your 30th great-grandfather.
Something like that's really
amazing stuff. Well, guess what? It happened. It happened.
These amazing things.
We're at the end of the show. Nick, thank you, buddy. I'm sorry that I. All right.
Well, stick around, Kath. We're gonna
Dave.
One last comment. I'll just say that June 8th, 1967 may have been the shooting start of World War III, although a case could be made that 1948 was the start of World War III, if you know what I mean.
I think the thank start you. Of Thanks, World buddy. War III
yeah,
was
I do. Thanks.
Basically 1948.
All right, Dave.
Because 45 was when.
Dave, let the listeners.
1945 is when Jews took over the world.
Yep. Let the listeners know where they could hear you, Dave, this week. Let the listeners know where they can hear you.
You can hear me on rinseradio.com, and you can get the feed through there. You can also, there's a number there at rinse.com. Just look up the phone number. You can call them and listen to your cell phone free, obviously, because most people have long distance free on their cell phone. And you can listen by simply calling that number. You can also go to davidduke.com. You can also get the link for the archives, and you can listen to all last week's show. And last week's shows were amazing, folks, so you'll enjoy it very, very much.
Awesome.
And I got a great show set for tomorrow morning. I think you're really going to like it. I can't wait to do it tomorrow.
All right, Dave, thanks. Everybody hang out. We're going to have a quick after-show show. That quick is in quotes.
Don't forget to tune in next Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern, for the Dave and Duke Call-In Show, where David Gahari and the incomparable Dr. David Duke will take your phone calls and discuss whatever questions you want to bring to the table. See you next Sunday.